Do you include romance in that?
Yes.
You're quite traditional as regards romance.
Well, you're really digging deep here. You're really
going... Oh, this is the stuff the listeners want to hear. Hello and welcome to you all to episode 102 of Aprender Inglés con Reza y Craig. I am Reza.
And I'm Craig.
How are you, Craig?
Very well, thank you.
If you're a new listener to this award-winning podcast, welcome. With over 40 years of teaching experience between Craig and I, we'll help you improve your English and take it to the next level. In this episode, we're going to talk about lifestyles. Also, we're going to talk about classroom language. We're going to help you with useful expressions for the classroom and talk about different lifestyles and the way people live, social groups, urban tribes, and all of that. But first, a very important part of the show, some listener feedback. Craig, I think you have some feedback to tell us about from Manuel in Paterna near Valencia.
That's right. And as you know, we love hearing from you and getting your emails and your voice messages. And this week, we've got a message from Manuel from Paterna, very close to us here in Valencia, Spain. Manuel says, "Hi, Craig. Hi, Reza. I've been listening to your podcast many months ago."
You mean, he means for many months.
For many months, yeah. Remember, with ago es un por un punto en el pasado. 2 weeks ago, 5 days ago, 1 year ago, for example. "So I've been listening to your podcast for many months while I'm doing my housework, at the gym, in the garden, etc. It's a wonderful way to improve the English." Improve English would be better. "It's a wonderful way to improve English, and I hope you'll reach at least 1,000 episodes and I could stand listening to." So do I. "I'd like, if you don't mind, to hear about how to use thank in English, the noun and the verb, because it's a bit confused to me."
It's a bit confusing.
Yeah, it's a bit confusing, ing. It's confusing to me. Or you could say, "It confuses me." So you can use confuse, "It confuses me." Remember the S. Or, "It's a bit confusing to me." "Thanks for your time and go on, Manuel." Thanks, Manuel. So I said thanks, Manuel. To thank is the verb, which in Spanish is agradecer. Agradecer a alguien por algo. So thank you for the coffee. Or Manuel, thank you for your email. And obviously you say thank you to someone. So thank you for listening to this podcast. And thank you for writing a review on iTunes, etc. And you can also say thanks, which is more informal, which means gracias. So thanks for listening. In the UK, there's a very common expression in also in Australian English to say cheers, which can also be used as thanks. So you give someone something or you make them a coffee, say, "Oh, cheers," which means thanks also. And there's a collocation to give thanks for something. Collocations are words which like to go together. So the verb to give and thanks, that's a very strong collocation. To give thanks for something. For example, we give thanks for the love of our family.
Craig, can you tell the listeners what Thanksgiving Day is?
That is a festival, a holiday in the United States of America where they have turkey, don't they? They have a Thanksgiving turkey. It's the third Thursday in November, is it? Or September? November.
It's November.
The third Thursday. What are they giving thanks for?
For the land, for prosperity, for all the good things in life. Isn't it a custom which goes back to the original Native Americans?
To the Pilgrims.
But it goes back originally to the Native Americans, and then they added giving thanks for the safe arrival of the Pilgrims. I think they mixed the two things together.
Possibly.
But it's an ancient Native American tradition originally, I believe.
Mm-hmm.
El Día de la Acción de Gracias.
Thanksgiving.
Craig, do you give thanks for things every day?
I do, actually. Yeah.
For what? What do you give thanks for?
Don't promise you won't laugh. You won't laugh.
No.
Okay. I'll just tell you. I won't tell the listeners. Okay. Every morning, I'm trying to think of three things to be thankful for, and I write them down in a diary. And it could be anything. It could be, thank you for this wonderful coffee I've just made, or thank you for my health, or thank you for the fact that I'm living in Spain with such lovely weather. So it could be the smallest thing, or it could be the largest thing. And I think it's really positive and good to think of things that are good in your life and that you're thankful for. Even if you think you've had bad luck, even if you think things are going badly for you, there must be many things, if you're still alive, that you're thankful for. And it's good to remind yourself. And it really is. It's a positive thing. It's a very positive thing. Yeah, I suggest everybody try it. Just tomorrow morning when you wake up, sit down and write three things on a piece of paper that you're thankful for, and you'll start the day in a good mood.
That does sound like a good idea.
So there's also an ironic use of thank you. For example, if I said, who do we have to thank for this mess? For example, ¿a quién debemos dar las gracias por este desastre? Or if you said to somebody, oh, thanks a lot, with that intonation, you're being ironic. You don't mean thank you. You mean, I do not appreciate what you've done, or I do not appreciate the mess you've made.
If I say to you, thank you very, very much, am I slightly thankful or very thankful?
You're very thankful. You're using emphasis to say thank you very much, or thank you so much, or many thanks. Muchísimas gracias. So that's for emphasis.
You could say, I can't thank you enough. That means I can keep on saying thanks, but you deserve even more than all my thanks.
Exactly. I can never thank you enough for what you've done.
Craig, who says thanks or gracias more, British people or Spanish speakers?
I think it's more of a British thing to use and say thank you. In fact, when I first came to Spain, I remember being in a restaurant and having a menú del día, and I was with British people. And the waiter came over and brought some water. Then he came back and brought some bread. And every time he came to the table, the English people I was sitting with said, thank you, thank you, thank you. And the waiter actually said, it's not necessary to keep saying thank you. And I remember that because I don't think it's so common in Spanish to keep saying gracias, muchas gracias, gracias. You might say something like muy bien or just say nothing. But it's very British, I think, I don't know if you agree, to say thank you, thank you, thank you every time somebody gives you something or does something for you.
Yeah, I think it is. So, Manuel, thanks for your feedback.
Thank you very much. We can't thank you enough for getting in touch. Let's look at some classroom language, Reza, because I don't think we've spoken about this, and I notice with my students some mistakes sometimes, especially when they're asking what something means. ¿Qué significa eso? Or ¿cómo se dice eso? What does this mean is the correct question. What does this mean? And sometimes I hear that not said correctly. So remember, what does this word mean, or what does this mean in Spanish? Or how do you say in English? For example, how do you say gracias in English?
Thank you.
Absolutely. Another question that could be useful, how do you spell it? How do you spell it? ¿Cómo se deletrea?
T-H-A-N-K-Y-O-U.
Thank you. How do you spell it? Or how do you pronounce it? How do you pronounce your name? How do you pronounce that word? How do you translate it? How do you translate this into Spanish? Or another common expression, what's the difference between black and white, for example? What's the difference between rain and sunshine? What's the difference between, from last week, shade, or 2 weeks ago, shade and shadow? Or could you tell me? Remember, it's tell me, not say me. Could you tell me? Or can you explain Can you explain this word? Can you explain it? Or could you write it, please? If you're speaking to someone, they can't understand, could you write it, please? Those expressions could help you. Remember, all of these expressions can be found on our webpage at inglespodcast.com/102.
We'd like to tell you about our sponsors, Italki. Italki is an online company that will help you improve your English. Why use them? What benefits have they got? Well, they're very effective. They're high quality. They're a very fast way to become fluent in English. All the teaching is one-to-one. It's done on Skype. So it's very effective. It's very personalized. And all the teachers are checked in advance and they let you know through their profile what their experience and qualifications are. So you choose your own teacher according to what you've read. If you didn't get the teacher who's quite right for you at the beginning, you could swap and try another one. They're all native and they're all qualified, experienced teachers. How much does it cost? Well, it depends. Some teachers charge more than others. All of this is written down clearly on the website. It might depend on the experience or the qualifications or other aspects of the teacher. So it's affordable for everyone because the middleman, for example, a language academy, has been removed. It's just you, the student, and the teacher, and you meet through italki.com. So it's very customized, very personalized, and there's a very human connection. What's more, there's a special offer for listeners of Aprender Inglés con Resi Craig. If you sign up to italki through inglespodcast.com/italki, italki will give you 100 free credits, which more or less could equal one lesson, depending on the price of the teacher. So if you sign up, you'll get 100 credits. So don't waste any more time. Try it out.
And Reza and I would like to thank Italki for sponsoring Aprender Inglés con Reza y Craig. Lifestyle, Reza. Let's talk about lifestyle because there are many different expressions and many different ways of living, different ways of having, of living different lifestyles. For example, nuclear family. What's a nuclear family? When I think of nuclear family, I think of a nuclear war, mm-hmm. of like a family surviving a nuclear attack. But it isn't that, is it?
That is not what it means, is it? Nuclear family refers to a family which has a nucleus, therefore the adjective nuclear. So they have a solid core. So you have the mother, the father, and then the children, the traditional kind of family, which was the most common type of family everywhere in the past. But of course that's changing. But that traditional idea is the nuclear family.
When you think of your family, do you think it as being nuclear?
Yes, my family when I grew up was a traditional nuclear family. I had two brothers and a sister, my mum and dad.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, me too.
Craig, if a nuclear family is traditional, how might you describe a modern family?
A modern family makes me think of the American sitcom, the situation comedy with, with, I don't know if you've seen it, very funny. Yeah.
Yes, whereas a modern family will have varieties. For example, the two parents might be gay, might be two men or two women, for example.
As they are in the sitcom, yeah.
That would be a modern family. Perhaps they have no children. Or perhaps they have adopted children, so they're not the blood parents. All that type of thing might be how to describe a more modern family.
So a modern family could also be a single parent family with yep. either the mother or the father being the only person raising or bringing up, criar the children, to raise the children.
Craig, would you consider yourself a jet setter?
No, I wouldn't. I don't think I'm... I love traveling. I do travel as often as I can. But a definition of a jet setter, as I see it, is a person who travels usually with the best hotels, has a very glamorous life, maybe has a car meeting the aeroplane when they land that takes them to the most expensive hotel. Someone who might fly to Milan or Paris just to go shopping would be an example of a jet setter. Could you think of someone famous who's a jet setter?
Well, very often these days we think of multimillionaires, particularly of new companies or people who have financial interests. People like perhaps Donald Trump. He's a bit of a jet setter. He can afford to go wherever he wants, when he wants, etc. And then football stars and Hollywood actors are often jet setters.
Pop stars, musicians. Yeah.
People like that.
They have the money to jet set.
Stockbrokers, important businessmen and women, people like that.
Are you familiar with the term millennial, describing a generation?
Yes, I've begun to hear it more and more just very recently.
Me too.
I'm not quite sure exactly what it refers to, but I have a fair idea. How would you define a millennial?
Well, I'm not sure exactly the dates that would describe a person who's a millennial, but I think it probably starts from the early 1980s, maybe, to around the year 2000 as being the birth date of a millennial. And then, of course, we've got Generation X's and Generation Y's. So Generation X's, occasionally abbreviated to Gen X, is the generation born after the Western post-war II baby boom, because the baby boomers were after the Second World War. Why were they called baby boomers? Was that the time after the war that people started to have babies?
Yes, because they felt that war was over, so surely that was the end of the fighting, so people felt safe to live a little, to let their hair down, to relax and to start families.
So we, Reza, we're not millennials, are we? Because we were born earlier. We're probably Generation X.
Yes, I was born, very hard to believe when you look at my photograph, listeners, I know, but I was born in 1970.
Really?
I know, it doesn't look like it, but yes.
You look a lot younger.
I'm joking. So I'm Generation X. Whereas our guest, we had not long ago, Mike Harding. He was born not long after the Second World War, so he's a baby boomer.
He's a baby boomer, yeah. The explosion of babies that happened. Explosion, no. The boom, yeah. The many babies that were born after the Second World War, when people started feeling safe. They were the baby boomers.
Craig, my parents and your parents were not baby boomers. They were born before the war or during it, so they're a bit too old to be baby boomers, aren't they? They're war or pre-war babies.
Yes, yeah? Exactly.
Do you know if your parents were born during the war or just before?
Just before the war in the 1940s. In the 1930s, yeah.
They would have known a very different lifestyle because, of course, in Europe in the 1930s, this is going to sound very familiar to millennials now, though. In the 1930s, there was a great recession and depression because of a stock market crash. Does that sound familiar?
It does, yeah.
And people born in that decade were in a depression and the money was tight and there weren't a lot of luxuries. Whereas the previous decade, the 1920s, had been quite luxurious, but the 30s was not a very luxurious period. A bit like post 2008 or 9 in Europe when we entered the current financial crisis.
No? Exactly. So we had our parents who were born before the Second World War, then we had the baby boomers that were born after the Second World War.
And the lucky ones. They're the really lucky ones.
So then Generation X were born between more or less the 1960s to the 1980s.
And our generation.
Our generation. And then came Generation Y, or millennials, born around the 1980s to around the year 2000. So the people growing up now in their 20s and 30s are, I suppose you could say, Generation Y.
I suppose they're probably called millennials, Generation Y, because they kind of matured at the change of the millennium. I guess that's why they're called millennials. They were kids at the end of the 20th century, but they kind of became young adults just at the beginning of the 21st century, whereas you and I, I'm afraid, Craig, became adults back in the 20th century in the late 80s or 90s.
And how do you think lifestyles have changed since we were young? Because do you remember the term yuppies when you were growing up? A yuppie?
Yes, young upwardly mobile, shortened to yuppie.
Or young urban professionals. So YUP, the yuppies, that was a very common expression and lifestyle for me growing up in the 80s and 90s.
Particularly in your part of the world, the southeast of England.
Yep.
That's really where the term yuppie was born, the southeast of England specifically. Margaret Thatcher's prodigy, let's say. Mm-hmm. The time when people were encouraged to embrace market forces and invest and become independent businessmen or get involved in the stock market and that type of thing.
And they generally had a lot of disposable income, which means perhaps they were living with their parents, they were working, they had well-paid jobs. So they had their own cars, they had expensive clothes, and they were making a lot of money in the 80s. And then, of course, the dot-com boom hit the world, and we started to call people dot-commers, people who were making money from the internet specifically. So a person who owns or works for a dot-com company was known as a dot-commer.
Can we just make a very important clarification now for all our listeners? You are listening to us on www.inglespodcast.com, but Craig and I are not dot-commers, because let me repeat what Craig said. A person who owns or works for a dot-com, well, by that he means and makes a lot of money out of it. We don't make any money out of it, so we're not a dot-commers. I just wanted to clarify that. We don't make lots of money from this, do we, Craig?
No, definitely not. We're not part of the nouveau riche, the French expression nouveau riche, people who have recently got wealthy or earned a lot of money. Nouveau riche also typically have this image of being very ostentatious, very que faltan buen gusto, lacking in good taste. So maybe they spend a lot of money, but not in a classy way.
Yeah, and they want you to know they've spent it. They want you to see that they've spent it. Whereas we talk also about old money. That's families.
Inherited money.
It's not new to their family. For generations, they've been rich. Perhaps in Britain, they might be old aristocracy or something like that, or from a long line of business people.
You could say from good stock.
Good stock
from
is
a good stock.
A slightly classist way of saying it, but yes, we do. Old money.
And another expression, to be a social climber. To climb, of course, is escalar. So a person who is keen or anxious to get a high social status could be called a social climber. Do you know any social climbers or anyone who you've known in the past who was a social climber?
Yes, and I'm not going to name them for obvious reasons, because people don't like to be seen as social climbers. It's not something that you would define yourself as, because it has a slightly negative connotation.
It means very, very ambitious, doesn't it?
Yeah.
Very ambitious.
Which is not a bad thing, to be ambitious, but a social climber, it implies that they're prepared to sacrifice other standards to achieve their ambitions, which is not good.
Well, I wouldn't necessarily call myself or you a social climber, but I would call myself a social misfit, MISFIT. Someone who has different views on culture, or maybe doesn't fit in with others in society. Que no sienta bien con los demás. I think that's why I'm here speaking into a microphone. I'm a bit of a social misfit. I'm not sitting in a bar watching football with everybody in the barrio.
Exactly, yeah. The very fact that you've gone to live in Spain, you didn't stay in your own country, that already makes you a bit different. It distinguishes you from the rest. The typical type of thing that a misfit might do. I speak for Craig and for myself, for both of us. Craig. Craig, what would you call a benefits or a dole scrounger in Spanish? Any idea?
No, I know the dole is el paro. And that's a British English expression. To be on the dole, D-O-L-E, means to be unemployed.
Yeah. So I don't know if there is a specific term in Spanish, but a benefits scrounger, a dole scrounger, is the sort of person who seems happy to live off state benefits. They don't seem that interested in getting a job. They're happy to be unemployed, and they just accept the fact that they will live on welfare payment. So it's a very negative connotation.
As are the words scrounger, S-C-R-O-U-N-G-E-R, scrounger, and sponger. Sponger from sponken, no? S-P-O-N-G-E-R. Those two people, those two terms for people who borrow from or live off others. So live, who benefit from other people. So you could be a scrounger or a sponger by saying to your friend, can I sleep in your flat for one or two nights and then staying for 6 months, for example, or always, you know, sort of a, going to somebody because you need something would be a scrounger or a sponger. Reza, what's a jailbird?
Well, jail is another word for prison. So a jailbird is the sort of person who often ends up in prison. So they're a person who you probably can't trust because they have a very dark past. They've broken the law. They're in and out of prison, just generally a suspicious person.
And another negative expression is a good for nothing. A good for nothing.
I happen to know the Spanish word for this. You don't hear it much. Un gandul.
Un gandul. I didn't know that. Yeah. A good for nothing.
Yeah.
On a more positive note, an opportunist is a person who takes advantage of opportunities when and as they arise. So maybe not necessarily without planning something, they just take advantage of a situation and turn the situation to their own good.
It's an interesting term, opportunist, because it can be very positive and it can be very negative. It just depends. For example, if you're a businessman who follows the rules, follows the laws, and has an ethical code, but you see a chance to make money where nobody else has, and you get in there quick and take advantage of the opportunity, you're an opportunist, well done. And people will be impressed by you, and that's a good thing.
I think Richard Branson's a bit of an opportunist. He tends to make business decisions based on the way the market is working.
Yes, I might not be quite so positive as you about him because in my house in Belfast, I have Virgin Media contracted for my internet, and it's not as rosy as all that. But yeah, let's leave it there and say, yeah, in a general kind of global way, he is an opportunist. Yeah, we'll not talk about the bills, but yeah. And then in a negative sense, an opportunist, well, imagine someone has had an accident. They've been hit by a car and there they are lying on the road. A negative opportunist will think, this person is lying on the road, they're badly hurt, they can't really defend themselves. I'm going to steal their watch, they'll never catch me, and run off with it. That would also be an opportunist. They didn't plan to steal that watch, but they saw an opportunity. So it could be positive or negative.
So it's taking advantage of opportunity in a negative way also.
Craig, you seem like quite a happy-go-lucky character. Am I right?
Happy-go-lucky. That means to me someone who's not worried about anything, someone who's very laid back, who's very easygoing. I don't think I would describe myself as happy-go-lucky. I mean, I get quite depressed at times. I get sad. I don't turn everything into a positive, optimistic scenario. I try to look on the good side, but I don't think I'm happy-go-lucky. A happy-go-lucky person, I think, is someone who always looks at the good side and always sees the glass as half full. You agree?
Yes, so you're not a happy-go-lucky person.
I don't think so.
You have your moments of positivity and negativity, like most of us.
I woke up in a terrible mood this morning. No reason, just woke up in a bad mood.
Would you call yourself a kind of very modern person or more of a traditionalist?
I think a bit of both. Sometimes I can be quite modern in my views, I think, and some of my values are quite traditional, probably a mixture of the two.
Can you divide into categories? I'll give you some examples, but use your own. Moral or ethical, religious, political, social. Which are traditional and which are modern for you?
In terms of values?
Yes. How do you class yourself?
Oh, okay.
Politically, are you modern or traditional? Morally, okay. Are you traditional or modern?
Politically, modern. More modern than traditional.
Okay. And what about the other categories?
And you said religion. Well, I'm not religious, so I suppose I'm modern.
Okay.
What were the others?
Social.
Socially modern, I think. I spend a lot of time on the internet. But I'm quite traditional in some respects because if I go out for a meal, I don't take my mobile phone or use my mobile phone at the table very often, hardly ever. So I'm traditional in that sense.
As regards personal relationships?
Say more traditional.
Do you include romance in that?
Yes.
You're quite traditional as regards romance.
Well, you're really digging deep here. You're really
Well, this is the stuff the listeners want to hear.
Well, let's turn the tables on you then with the same categories. How do you describe yourself?
Politically, I think I'm so old-fashioned that I'm ultra-modern because things go around in cycles.
You're ahead of your time.
Yes, by being behind. Because, in my opinion, all lifestyles come and go in cycles. I mean, I'm for example, let's talk about sex.
That's a song, isn't it? Let's talk about sex, baby.
I'm not in favor of, you know, organizing orgies on a large scale. But the Romans were, and so were the Greeks. And we look up to them as kind of highly civilized, you know, the Roman Empire, the Greeks, how civilized were they and all the things they did for us? They loved a good orgy. It's part of their civilization. So it's funny how things come and go in cycles. You know, the 1960s were a very liberated decade in Europe, sexual freedom, etc. But it's nothing compared to what the Romans and Greeks did,
yeah. You
know. So it's funny, things come and go in cycles. And I think although the Romans were politically very conservative, for sexually, for example, the higher classes were very liberated.
And it's interesting, isn't it, that on a similar point, thinking of the Victorian times, when industrialization was spreading across Europe and the world was opening up industrially, morally and sexually, it went the other way and people became very conservative and very traditional in their social behaviors.
Right, yeah.
What about the expression hipster? HIPSTER. What does that mean to you if I say to you a hipster?
Well, it's very interesting that you've just talked about global changes in through the Industrial Revolution and things like that. The word hipster has become a very global term. As far as I understand, the term comes from North America originally, but it's now very common in Britain and Spain, and I suppose South America, though I don't know so well.
Have you heard Spanish people use the word hipster?
Yeah, un hipster. They say it just like that. That's the Spanish word for it. And I understand that originally a hipster was someone who was hip.
Hip, the adjective, hip person,
meaning
hip man.
Cool. Hey, that's hip. That's really cool, which is a term which goes way back to the early 1960s, but it kind of came back in again not that long ago to describe these people as being hip. They're hipsters. And originally they were very cool, but that was about 5 or 10 years ago. And now they're not so cool because many other people have decided to be like them. So now they've lost their originality. So like all lifestyle choices, at first they can seem very original, like the hippies of the 1960s. But after 10 or 20 years, they didn't seem that original. And it's perhaps the same for hipsters now. They've lost their originality. They started off as being social misfits, but they were interesting people. They traveled to weird places and did weird things. But now they tend to all look the same. The men have beards and wear check shirts and skinny jeans.
So
and they
you,
all look the same.
Would you describe a hipster then as someone who's rather pretentious or too trendy, demasiado?
Yeah,
maybe.
It's someone who's trying to hide their interest in following fashion by pretending not to.
But really they are.
But really they are. Because why else do they have the lumberjack type checked shirt, the beard and the skinny jeans like so many other people of their age?
Interesting. Interesting. So how do you see yourself, dear listener? It's your turn to practice your English. Let us know if you think you fit any of the categories we've mentioned. And you can send us a voice message and practice your English. Send us a message at speakpipe.com/inglespodcast or go directly to our webpage at inglespodcast.com where you will find a place to send us your voice message.
Or you could send an email to Craig at craig@inglespodcast.com
or to Reza at belfastreza@gmail.com. On next week's episode, we'll be speaking about urban slang. We've got some interesting expressions for you that you probably haven't heard of. And also we'll be looking at some more mispronounced words by Spanish speakers. Until then, it's goodbye from me.
And it's bye-bye from me.
Thanks for listening, and we'll see you next week. The music in this podcast is by Pitts. The track is called See You Later.